Public radio is here for you. It doesn't matter how old you are, how big your home is, or what kind of car you drive. WOSU and NPR connect you to news and information in civil conversations. That's why 43 million Americans listen to NPR each week. WOSU is part of our community, covering and discussing issues important to you, standing with the facts. Meet the moment with WOSU. Go to WOSU.org/protect.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Several cities, including Columbus, recently filed a federal lawsuit challenging funding cuts by the Trump administration to programs aimed at fighting homelessness. Columbus stands to lose around $1 million in federal grants unless the city complies with executive orders related to DEI policy. Columbus and other cities in the suit say that putting conditions on funding marked for homelessness prevention is unconstitutional. We're talking about the lawsuit and challenges to combating homelessness here in Columbus and around the state. Our guests this hour are Amy Riegel, Executive Director for the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Welcome back to All Sides, Amy.
Thank you for having me.
And also with us, back for All Sides, is Shannon Isom, President and CEO of the Community Shelter Board. Welcome back, Shannon.
Thank you. Appreciate being here.
So, as I said in the introduction, the funding has been approved by Congress, but now the U.S. Department of Housing is saying that to get the grant money, the city or county or whoever is designated to get the money has to be in line with recent executive orders related to gender, immigration, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Shannon, what do you think about that when you hear that Columbus might not get the money and that's the reason why?
Yeah. The first thing I think about is what we are one of many across the country that is grappling with and continues to grapple with an increase of homelessness well before this order was ever executed. And so as we have more restrictions, more barriers, the framework becomes smaller and smaller of what we can do to solve. When we're dealing with the human condition, it is imperative that we're using as many tools as possible to be as creative as possible, as innovative as possible, but also to be more ready as possible. It takes a lot of energy for that. And so as we're not only thinking about the executive order and doing our deep dive and trying to make sure that we're compliant, which takes a lot of our resources away, mental capacity, the ability to serve. But likewise, it also makes that framework much tighter and smaller, meaning that by natural reflex, you're going to just serve less people. That's a concern as the numbers are increasing across the country and especially here within our community.
Now, for the lawsuit, cities like New York City, Boston, San Francisco, those are some of the cities taking part in the lawsuit. You're not a city attorney, Zach Klein's office, and you don't pretend to play him on TV. But how Columbus became involved? Because when you look at the list of cities, I mean, New York, Boston, San Francisco, those are bigger than us.
Yeah, what I love about our leadership in Columbus is that although those cities are bigger than us, as someone who just moved here, I want to remind we're a pretty big city.
Yeah.
And when we should be named, when we look overall at our growth and the amount of economic boon and how attractive this community is, especially for young talent and resources. So we are those cities. We are that city. And I think that our leadership then positions us that way, being not only around how do we make a good impression on what's going on federally, but then how do we stand for what's right? And so I applaud our city. I applaud Zach Klein for leaning in and being a driver, but being a leader in this space and saying that this, and we need every tool possible for this community who's growing in leaps and bounds, and for every single solitary community member to have dignity, and we need every tool possible. So I appreciate that Zach Klein through in Columbus and those on that auspicious list.
Now, Amy, you run a statewide organization, but when you heard about the federal funding being cut, I'm not sure, I didn't see Cleveland or Cincinnati on that lawsuit, but what do you think about whenever you hear about federal money that's already been appropriated, but maybe not being handed out?
So this is very concerning all across the state, all across the country. And one of the biggest issues is, as we see these executive orders coming down that are in contradiction to not only the funding that has been approved by our congressional leadership, but also that is written in to the Code of Federal register that is codified. There are long, long, long pages of rules and regulations and how this money goes out. And now an executive order comes out. It has vague, undefined language in it that is meaning different things to all different types of people. It leaves a lot of uncertainty in how to run our organizations, how to serve people in need, and how to address the issues that are before us. So although we would like a much smoother path to some type of compromise, to some type of agreement of how to come to terms with these changes to federal funding, I think it's imperative we are very happy that there are cities like Columbus who are willing to put the lawsuit forward to take those steps to go through what's going to be a long process to add clarity and to bring some light to the communities who are in the dark about how to move forward.
Now, Columbus stands to lose about $1 million if this funding doesn't come here. Is that money that you were planning on getting on a particular date? Like, or is it money that you have already spent?
Yeah, we haven't spent the dollars quite yet. However, yeah, we're past the date. Mm. We're in May, and we usually see it around the first quarter of the calendar year, very early, anywhere between January and March. And so, yes, we're past the date. We haven't received the dollars. And not only those dollars, I mean, there's other dollars that are being held up. To underscore what Amy said, for even those dollars that still look like they are moving through and going to be passed through, we're concerned, right? The vagueness, the amount of ambiguity, then also makes you make decisions to say, gosh, I may have lack. I may have some level of scarcity. And that also includes you making decisions just based on just in case. And so that $1 million certainly is a significant amount of dollars. It, however, doesn't stop any of our particular programming, but it certainly makes decision making. It certainly makes us having to shuffle our budget resources differently just in case those dollars come through. And even if you believe you are complying, the other challenge is, but are you? Because of the ambiguity and the vagueness in which things are written.
Hmm. Amy, do you know if there's other places besides Columbus? I mean, Columbus has said they stand to lose $1 million. They put that in writing in the lawsuit. Have you heard from other organizations that get federal money and they don't know where it is?
Yes. So there are questions about all different kinds of grants, especially through the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Mm-hmm. Our organization has a grant that is supporting youth homelessness and reimagining the youth homeless system across the state of Ohio. And in that grant, it was required in order to receive the grant that there were dollars that were set aside specifically for diversity, equity, and inclusion. That was what the line item was called. Hmm. However, those dollars are actually being used to support youth participating in the process to help reimagine what a youth homeless system looks like. So they're young people who have experienced homelessness, who are being compensated for their time, who are being offered dinner when they come to a meeting, who might be receiving, cell phone stipends, things like that, so that they can participate. And that's being labeled under diversity, equity, and inclusion. Hmm. So that's the part that we are at risk of losing because it went under this category that's now in question. There are so many like this that we don't know if that money is still there. We don't know if we're not allowed to spend that money. We don't know what the status is because as we reach out to the federal government, there's no response on how to move forward.
So it's all clear as mud here. I don't know.
Yes.
Is that an understatement? Because, yeah, okay.
Yes. I think mud would be an improvement from where we are
now.
We know what mud looks like.
Okay, I see. I see. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the state of homelessness in Ohio with Amy Riegel, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, and Shannon Isom, President and CEO of the Community Shelter Board. Earlier this year, we devoted an hour of All Sides to homelessness in Ohio just after the point in time count numbers were released. Amy, could you remind us how the point in time count is done in the state?
Yes. So there is a week in January every year where communities all across the country take account of how many people are experiencing homelessness. And it is conducted in January specifically so that we can try to get a count that is accurate as possible when many people would hopefully have sought shelter. Because for those climates that experience, like Ohio, that experience cold weather, people are more likely to be inside than outside. So it's to make it a little bit easier of an experience. Every community creates a plan and they then try to enumerate how many people are both sheltered, unsheltered, or in a transitional state of housing. And those numbers are then sent up to the federal government. And by the end of the year, I know it's a slow process, but by the end of the year, we will have a full count comparing every community across the country in what their point in time numbers were.
Now, Shannon, you had an event about a week ago where you talked about the point in time count for Franklin County, and you found out that the numbers rose about 7%. Is that correct?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that event?
Sure. Yeah. We, as Amy noted, you know, the point in time count has become an increasingly bigger deal as not only people are experiencing more homelessness, but I think that people are also just more aware of where homelessness sits. We have known for a long time that homelessness is the end state of a lot of parts of our system somehow failing or not having the right resources for right aligned to our right population. We know those things are increasing here within Franklin County, and Amy probably can attest to that across the state. What we also know just through predictive modeling is that for Franklin County itself, that we were going to see increase in homelessness at least until 2028, unless we did something to disrupt that. So as we saw this increase overall in unsheltered homelessness, which includes those in transitional housing, includes those that are in sheltered homelessness, includes definitely those who were counting on the land, that 7.4 increase, although increase, we were already predicting it would increase. What is really important about the point in time count from a strategic standpoint is that we're also using all year to figure out, are our processes aligned? Do we have the right policies? Are we looking at our right population? Are we using the right tools? Do we have the right coalitions? So not only the financial piece, which we talk about a lot as a good indicator, but also, how does the community respond and how does the coalition of folks respond to other resources just very naturally, like a community benevolence? And so why we're looking at those that and making sure that we're looking at that count is to say, are we increasing? Yes. But are we increasing to what we modeled, thought we were going to increase by? And we're still looking at that. What is excellent, though, I would have to say about Franklin County is that where we thought we would see the most increase, 68% unsheltered homelessness by 2028, we actually this year saw our first decrease, minus 11% of unsheltered homelessness. So although we do see an increase and we're still looking to figure out how do we mitigate that, how do we definitely change the trajectory, what is excellent is that we think we're on the right step, right tools, right processes, right coalition to change and respond to unsheltered homelessness. That's good news.
Now, Shannon, you, WOSU News reporter Allie Vigrinzik attended your event, and it was in Reynoldsburg, actually, not in downtown Columbus, as you would think it would be. And she wrote in her story that that was on purpose. Tell me why.
Very purposeful.
Yeah, why did you pick Reynoldsburg?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. In a lot of ways, Franklin County has been distilled and reduced down to Columbus, and certainly Amy from a state perspective, but also Franklin County is made up of a lot of municipalities and cities, many with mayors and their own levels of obviously a town ruling jurisdiction. And they call us saying, hey, what are we doing? What are some tools that we could utilize for increasing homelessness? So why it was imperative, why it was important, obligatory for us to move out into places and spaces that homelessness is not really thought about is because this is a Franklin County issue. This isn't any particular city. Why I'm mentioning very particularly the coalition is because it's going to take a collective voice of communities, of energy, of leadership from all parts of Franklin County to respond to produce a sustainable system that no longer are responding to homelessness just with shelters, but really saying we need to respond to homelessness with housing. And that lift becomes easier when we're doing it all together. So we appreciate Reynolds Berg being able to host us, and certainly, which I think is always a cornerstone of any community, is the faith community and civic community also host us.
And Amy, let's have you weigh in on that idea of whenever people think of combating homelessness, preventing homelessness, they're thinking of the major cities. They're thinking Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati. But your organization knows full well that it goes beyond the major cities.
It definitely goes beyond the major cities. We see homelessness in every community across the state of Ohio. And as we see homelessness in those communities, there are certain parts of it that vary, that differ in how to approach it, but there are some similarities. And the number one similarity in homelessness experience is that homelessness is a housing problem. And there just isn't enough housing in any of these communities in order to support individuals at the very lowest incomes, especially with the supports that some of them may need. And so as we think about how to address homelessness, whether it's in Toledo or Chillicothe or, you know, in a little village somewhere across the state, it does not matter what those numbers look like or who those individuals are. The end goal is always housing, and that it's safe, that it's affordable, and that it's available to them in the community where they want to thrive.
Amy Riegel, the executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, and Shannon Isom, president and CEO of the Community Shelter Board, are both staying with us. After the break, we're going to learn about state funding concerns, and we'll learn about the Ohio Housing Trust Fund. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Cuts to homelessness assistance could result in Columbus losing $1 million in housing and urban development grant money. Columbus is taking part in a multi-city lawsuit, suing the Trump administration over plans to cut the funding to homeless aid agencies. At the state level, there are proposed changes to the Ohio Housing Trust Fund, and advocates say if these changes remain in the final version of the budget, it could have a drastic impact on many communities. Still with us is Shannon Isom, president and CEO of the Community Shelter Board. Thanks again for being here, Shannon.
Thank you.
And Amy Riegel, executive director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Thanks again for being here, Amy.
Great to be here.
So, Amy, the Ohio Housing Trust Fund has been around since 1990. It provides money not just for homeless services, but it also for home repairs and modifications to keep people in their homes longer. Can you tell me more about what is the Ohio Housing Trust Fund and how the money is used?
Yeah, so the Ohio Housing Trust Fund is a statewide fund that is a fund that is collected through recorder fees. So recorder fees are assessed at the county level every time you record a deed or a mortgage or different types of real estate documents. There is a fee that's charged for that recordation. And half of that fee stays with the county. Half of that fee goes to the Ohio Housing Trust Fund. Those funds are brought together with the Ohio Department of Development, and then they're reallocated across the state based upon the guidelines of the Ohio Housing Trust Fund, which states that the funds be used for housing and services for individuals at 30% or below area median income, so the lowest income individuals within our community, that they're spent for certain types of activities that help not only support people in emergent needs, but also in long-term goals such as home ownership. And then also it says that 50% of the funds actually are dedicated to the rural communities of the state of Ohio, so that this would not be a fund that only supported the large urban areas, but that it would support those small communities that sometimes have a harder time of being able to get federal funds or other types of funding to do homeless services the way that an urban area might be able to. So it really was a fund that was dedicated to be an equal opportunity type fund for all parts of Ohio, serving those most in need.
Now, I had not heard of the Ohio Housing Trust Fund up until like a couple of weeks ago, whenever there was this, when a story came out saying that the House budget changed it. Is that just me not being in the know, or is it a fund that just has run smoothly so no one notices?
It is definitely one of those things where it is running in the background so smoothly and so effectively that you don't hear about it. It's not making a lot of noise. It's not a squeaky wheel. It's just that steady force that's doing great work all across the state, often called different names of different programs. And it really is kind of that quiet machine that is making things run across Ohio.
Now tell me what the House budget did to the fund. What change did they make?
So the House budget says that the funds that are collected at the county level would not go up to the state Ohio Housing Trust Fund anymore. Instead, those funds would just stay in the county where they're collected and be spent in that county for housing as dedicated by the county commissioners. And so where this runs into a problem is that for some counties, some of our favorite counties in the state of Ohio, they're not collecting a lot of fees because they don't have a lot of real estate transactions, because they don't have a lot of these activities that would generate a lot of recorder's fees. These are where we have lots of agricultural land, which is the largest industry in the state of Ohio, where we have our beautiful state parks. These are all areas where they just don't have as many housing developments moving in and generating all of these fees. And so therefore, those communities, especially in Southeast Ohio, along the Pennsylvania border and in Northwest Ohio, would be decimated in their ability to receive these funds because of the lack of fees that they are generating for good reason within their community.
But I guess if the county is smaller, right, and doesn't have as many real estate transactions to make the money, but then they also probably, I don't know, do they need less money because they have less problems with housing because there's fewer houses? I don't know. Is that where the house is getting this from, is that each county is different so they can just do it their own way?
Yes. So it is an idea of local control, that local individuals would be able to make more decisions. But there is kind of a misperception that if you have less people, you have less problems. In some cases, there are less people, but you still have those who are in need. And actually, the resources to bring to bear to help solve those problems are harder to find in smaller communities than they are in larger communities. That often feels a little weird to wrap your head around, because you would think Columbus, they have these big numbers, they have many obstacles and, you know, challenges that they face. But just by the size, they're able to be able to fund different types of opportunities, go after more competitive national grants or with large national philanthropies. In a small Pike County or in a small Scioto or somewhere like that, oftentimes what they do is go together with their surrounding counties to be able to have the economy of scale to be able to serve those who are in need within their communities and do it as more of a regional approach. That works when you're applying to one entity to get your money. when that group now has to apply to 11 counties in hopes that they'll be able to secure the funding. And then if they're not able to secure the funding in one county, does that mean they now are not able to serve those in need in that community? It's going to bring a lot of questions to bear about how we provide services, especially in rural areas.
And Shannon Isom, I want to bring you back into the conversation. Does the Community Shelter Board get funding from the Ohio Housing Trust Fund?
Absolutely, we do. Absolutely. And so we've been on several calls about this. This change is and we appreciate change, but this change is probably a little unnecessary in the sense of your very first question. Why didn't I ever hear about it? Yay. I think that was a compliment that you had never heard about it. It works well. I think just as many things within the state of Ohio, we feel really good about some collective efforts and looking at it through a state lens and ensuring that there's parity across our entire state. In like fashion, agriculture, we heard yesterday again, agriculture is our number one commodity, and all of us share in that. I mean, even though we're not on farms, some of us aren't on farms, some of us aren't dealing with the issues around farming and agriculture, and yet we prosper overall because of that. With that exact same shared view, this trust fund does that. And so there may be more activity here within Franklin County around housing. But if some of our contiguous and even some of our contiguous counties that there's porousness and there's some flexibility and agility around that, those borders that allows others to benefit, we want that. We want to make sure that there's nothing, there's very little benefit in having a county that maybe does not have as much transaction, not being able to have levels of resources that's needed for them, for their communities. And so breaking this apart and disaggregating this from a housing perspective, I don't think is the right way to go. So yeah, we support Ohio.
Okay, so Amy, that was in the House version of the budget that they changed the way the money was distributed. Have you gotten an indication in the Senate version that it's going to stay the same? Do you know?
There is an amendment that has been drafted that would request to remove that language so that the Housing Trust Fund would stay the same. We've also offered a compromise of a study committee that would look at the effectiveness and the logistics of the trust fund. It is a big fund that
I want to ask you, how do you know how much money is in it?
Yeah. So it has an appropriation of up to $65 million. Mm-hmm. Usually it funds somewhere between 45 to 55 million
a year?
In any given year. Okay. Yes. And so it's a lot of money for a lot of things to a lot of different groups. So if this change were to happen, or if a change were to be suggested, we believe that it should be done after thoughtful consideration, intention, and really clear analysis about all the different layers that would be affected by any tiny tweak, even with the trust fund. That can't be done in this very quick budget process. It does need to be a standalone process that really looks at each part of a change.
Now, as someone who uses the fund and knows about the fund, do you feel like this came out of nowhere, or is it more that the House is really leaning into local control?
We really feel that this came out of nowhere. We actually ended the lame duck session at the end of 2024 with many leaders within the House and the Senate stating that they wanted to help us find ways to increase the trust fund and to find more sources of funding for the trust fund and to make it stronger. It was even one part of the Senate Select Committee on Housing's recommendations was to help to solidify the Ohio Housing Trust Fund. So then to see it dismantled without any clear affinity group behind that decision, it seemed very much out of the blue and something that no one was prepared for, even those within the House.
Now, when I said that I had never heard of it, that caused me to, you know, Google it and try to figure out what it was. So it came out of a constitutional amendment in the 90s. And basically, the constitutional amendment said, do something to fix housing. Right. And then this is that. Am I reading that right? I'm trying to simplify it.
You are reading it exactly correct. So not only did the constitutional amendment say that the government can do something to address housing, that it is a public good, but that they should do something. And some people might say, well, that was the crazy 90s, you know, things have changed since then. But we just did public opinion polling in the fall where the question was asked, is housing important? Should our government do more? And what we found is that the majority, the vast majority of people said, this is a problem. We believe something should be done. We believe the government should do something. And we don't believe the government's doing enough. Mm-hmm. Almost 65% of even Republicans said they're not doing enough. So this was definitely a surprise because public opinion has not changed. Mm-hmm. And one effective tool that we had being taken away just doesn't seem to be the way that the public is asking us to go.
When I read that it was a constitution related to a constitutional amendment, though, that made me think, like, is the Ohio Housing Trust Fund in the Constitution? But no, the amendment just said to do something, and then this was their answer, right?
Yeah, so the legislature and the governor's office spent 12 years studying the question of how should...
Like, of course they did, 12 years. That's a long time. Okay, continue.
There were three study committees, and all three of the study committees came back and said the same thing, that there should be the Ohio Housing Trust Fund, that the recorder fees were the best way to fund them. At the time, their recorder fees were a certain amount. They basically just doubled them so that 50% was for the recorders, 50%. So it never took anything from the recorders. It just added to that fee. And they also believed that it was important that it would be budget neutral, that it not come from general fund. And as they wrote the rules, a lot of the architects did see that there could be pitfalls if there was kind of a not intention around where the dollars went. And that is why there was the intentional language about 50% going to rural communities.
Okay. The last question I'll ask about this, because it's still in the works between the Senate and the House and figuring it out. Have you heard from Governor DeWine on this? Has he weighed in on the Ohio Housing Trust Fund?
So in Governor DeWine's as introduced budget, he had included the appropriation of $65 million. And so his expectation was status quo for the trust fund. As we have spoke with agencies that would be dramatically affected by the loss of the trust fund, they are having conversations with the governor's office, and they too were surprised by this action. It was very much out of the blue for them also. And so I think there's still a lot of questions and exploration of where did this come from and then how to move forward from that point. But it was definitely not something that they had on their radar as a threat within this budget.
All right. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about homelessness in Ohio with Amy Riegel, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio, and Shannon Isom, President and CEO of the Community Shelter Board. After the break, we're going to talk about some things being done to build more affordable housing and if there's any way to build it faster. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jarovich. The city of Columbus is spending $10.4 million on homeless shelters and programs to help residents at risk of ending up on the streets. This is less than the city gave last year because last year's total included COVID relief money from the American Rescue Plan Act. That money is gone now, but the problem of homelessness remains. We're talking about the challenges to combating homelessness here in Columbus and around the state. While funding cuts loom, but advocates have to ask for more money that isn't there. Still with us is Shannon Isom, President and CEO of the Community Shelter Board. Thanks again for being here, Shannon.
Great to be here.
And Amy Riegel, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Hi again, Amy.
Thank you. Hello.
And Shannon, I mentioned right there in the intro that the city is giving your organization $10.4 million for the Community Shelter Board's work. I know that you spoke to Franklin County about how much money they're giving. Are they increasing the budget for your organization?
Yes. Let me first just say Community Shelter Board is in alignment with our first relationship, which is HUD. And because we're in alignment with our first relationship, HUD federally, we must be in alignment with Franklin County because ultimately it is the seat in which federal dollars flow. And so we have worked really hard in not only ensuring that we're speaking quantifiably about what is the a dollar amount to take care of our community members experiencing homelessness, but also what is the dollar amount to ensure that our partners that are developing housing for community members at very, very low income, that we're also being strong advocates for that. The best antidote to homelessness is housing. And so we must continue to ensure that those HUD dollars that flow federally, and we are one of the counties that are ranked one and two in that space across the entire country, that in protection of that, Franklin County responds. And they did. Mm-hmm. They did flat fund us, which in the beginning of the year at $6.07 million. But just as of today, within the last couple of hours, we heard that our request for increased funding was met. And so we will walk away with the highest level of increase that we've seen since 2016, which ultimately covers ARPA. So although it won't necessarily view as a huge infusion into the community, what it does do is stabilize those dollars that were one-time dollars, ARPA, COVID dollars, CARES dollars. It does stabilize the community resources for that. So it we were concerned in losing ARPA that we would have to contract our system, but instead they met it with an additional $5 million that ultimately will keep our system maintained. And that's good news as homelessness is increasing.
Okay, so you're saying there's a $5 million increase. So what's the total then?
The total is $11.07 million, and that is without the pass-through of HUD that comes through federally as well.
Okay, so Franklin County is increasing. They're basically, when you say ARPA, that is the American Rescue Plan Act.
Yes, yes.
The American Rescue Plan Act was federal money, basically COVID relief money that we still had, right? But that's all gone now. So Franklin County has decided, rather than just funding you how they have been, they're making up for ARPA money.
Yes, they're making up for the lost ARPA money that are coming out of funds that are here seated within the county, which they've almost doubled then the investment into homelessness and housing. And that's excellent. Not only is it excellent just from our community perspective, but that will also show as we compete for HUD dollars federally.
So that money, which I guess you're saying is, kind of like the same funding you had last year because it included the ARPA money, but that money from Franklin County, you're going to use that for... Is it more shelters? Is it more programming? Where will the money go?
Yeah, it'll first go directly to our shelter system. So as it stands currently, we have nine nonprofits that we fund that have our emergency beds. On any given day, we are running about 1,435 beds in the winter with overflow, with winter warming centers, with responding to crisis. That goes up to 2,000, and we are increasing in homelessness. Our beds are full, and so to contract down or to reduce our beds because we have lost those one-time dollars would really hurt not only our nonprofits but also the community. And so the county has stepped up with those dollars and replacing those dollars and ensuring that every single shelter bed, which we're running today, will continue to run. Not only that our crisis hotline And that includes our domestic violence crisis hotline. That includes our homeless shelter hotline. We'll continue to run. And then that any housing program that we have within our portfolio also continues to run as well.
I wanted to ask you about a specific example. It's an issue that comes up when you need to find shelter space quickly. The example was in the news back in March, the Loyalty Inn off of Bryce Road and Interstate 70. It was shut down due to code violations. There were about 30 people living there who were put in that hotel after the city cleared an outdoor encampment. But the main reason this hotel was chosen, despite the issues with the code violations, was because it would accept pets.
Yes.
Can you talk to me about how complicated this housing process is? And then you add pets in.
Oh, my goodness. What we are seeing more than ever, and I don't think that we are unique in this situation across the country, is that the number one reason that we're seeing why people will not move into the shelter is because of their pets. And the shelter doesn't accept pets. And that's again, not unique for us. That's across the country. And so what we're finding is that in a Midwest city, in a Midwest state where it gets very, very cold, very different maybe than a border city and a border state, that people will stay outside and they will endure the weather because of it. And what we then find across the Midwest, number one reason why unsheltered folks are at risk is because of hypothermia, which also moves to death. And we said, not here. And so we were scouring what are our options to ensure that every community member, regardless of their need, also has a right aligned option. And for us, it was a hotel that accepted pets. But we only had one. We only had one. And so not only was Loyalty Inn, what we understand was on the code violation from the city perspective, we also understood from our perspective that we had a decision to make, and we would much rather have to deal with the city than to deal with the death of any of our community members on our land.
Yeah, and it so was December. It was cold.
It was freezing. Yeah. It wasn't even cold. It was freezing.
Yeah,
and we made that decision, and I think we've received a lot of input about that decision, but I think that we made the right one.
Okay. Do you have other hotels you work with now to help with the pet situation? I mean, people with pets don't go away.
That's right.
Yeah.
What we are doing is what we're trying to find instead is a hotel motel. I think I've even spoken about it here with you, a hotel motel option that we can actually buy that becomes in our portfolio of options. And then we can have agility within our system to take whoever is needed. Couples, we can take couples that are mom and daughter because there's a definition around couples for HUD. So we need to have more flexibility in our system. So instead of saying, are we looking for a hotel that takes pets, what we're doing is trying to find a hotel option that we then can buy that provides agility within our system that we can use it for anything needed.
I think you mentioned that when you were on the show back in February, but so you haven't bought one since then?
No, we were close. Okay. As you know, and you've also covered this, is that we do have NIMBYism. So we do have people who are concerned about their community, and I understand, concerned about our community to have a concentration of anything differently, especially homelessness in another shelter or another type of shelter within our system. But if given a second, I would like to ask for communities to think about and walk alongside with us with a YIMBYism, with a yes in my backyard. How do I take care of our community? How do we take care of gaps? So yes, we're still dedicated to finding a hotel motel. But we're looking for the right community to do that.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about homelessness in Ohio with Shannon Isom, President and CEO of the Community Shelter Board, and Amy Regal, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. And Amy, I know you wanted to talk a little bit more about federal money. We spent the beginning of the hour talking about specific money that has already been allocated and the money isn't flowing due to different reasons related to executive orders. But then there's also future money because a new budget has come out. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So President Trump announced a week or two ago his version of the next budget, making his presidential recommendations for what that budget would look like. And we've heard lots of talk about DOGE and different government efficiency efforts, but this was the first real official document of that vision and what it would look like for the agencies moving forward. And the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development is the foundation. It is the backbone of funding for housing assistance across the United States. And just to remind everyone, with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development for every person who qualifies for housing assistance through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, only one in four, so 25%, actually receive the assistance that they qualify for. So it's still already woefully underfunded. Yet the governor, the president, his budget stated that there would be a 46% decrease to funding to HUD and 43% cut to voucher programs across the state. So Shannon and I have both talked about how housing is the solution to homelessness. Mm-hmm. And most people, when they're exiting homelessness and in many different types of situations, they need a housing voucher in order to stabilize them in that housing for a period of time so they can get their feet on the ground and then move forward. In some cases, though, people need assistance for a very long time.
The voucher helps with rent, right?
It pays
the rent.
Yes, it mm-hmm. pays usually the majority of the rent. And so these programs would undercut the ability for millions of Americans to be able to find stable housing. But it also takes away the rent from the landlords who are, you know, providing these units across our country, here in the state of Ohio, here in Columbus. And it would change dramatically the ability for people to find and afford housing across the state. The other thing that the president has put into the budget is that they would remove language that supports a program called Housing First, which states that imperfect people are able to be housed and then they receive supportive services and wraparound care to be able to address the things in their lives that need additional assistance. A recovery program, a treatment program, mental health services, workforce services, learning how to cook and do more nutritional options for their families. It's all types of services. Mm-hmm. And that would also end, which would allow many providers across America to say that a person has to be perfect in order to enter my unit. It doesn't mean that there's more treatment available, that there's more mental health services available. It just means that it offers another way for people to discriminate against individuals who they have classified as having defects or deficiencies, even though imperfect people are housed every single day because all of us are housed and none of us are perfect. So it's an unfair way to once again keep people out of housing and to keep people, unfortunately, in shelters and on the streets of our communities.
Now, this is the president's proposed budget, so Congress will get a chance to weigh in. Is that your organization's next step to talk to Ohio's congressional delegation?
Yes, we are reaching out to congressional delegations, and we know that there is a majority in the House and in the Senate. And we're hopeful, though, that this isn't just something that falls across party lines, that it really is the communities that are heard, that the people who are in need, that their voices are understood, and that the Congress takes a different path forward in this budget.
And we are running out of time, but I wanted to have a chance to come back locally because the mayor's office is pitching a new plan as well. Mayor Andrew Ginther announced a $500 million affordable housing bond package. And that is going to be on the ballot in November. Do I have that right, Shannon?
Yes. Perfect.
Okay. So tell me just we have about 3 minutes. You can tell me what this bond package is going to do. This is the city's answer to trying to help with the housing shortage.
I think that what is imperative that we are listening to is, even as Amy is describing, is that we're going from local to a state and then to federal and coming back. And I think that's important to understand, that when you start layering in both the disaggregation of our system or the disassembling of our system, it is equally as imperative that we understand how are we adding to our safety net of our system. This is a value add because it is also additive to the zoning a bill that they've also done. Mm-hmm. And so when we're looking at a community, a city that is thinking differently about zoning, meaning that we're going to add density, we're going to add diversity of housing, we're going to have a portfolio of housing that is going to meet the needs of all people. And then on top of that is infusion of resources, of money, of I think diversity of minds, of developers, of ways of thinking about housing. Those two things together are going to have a real boon. I hope, which I think is going to happen, a right sizing within our city limits around housing. Where I'm standing up, mm-hmm. and I'm kind of screaming from the rooftops, is ensuring that for the very, very low income, mm-hmm. I like to say people are allowed to be poor. People are allowed to have transitions in their life where they have lack of resources. What we don't want to see is that they're on the streets because of it. So what we're standing up and saying is that, hey, within that bond package, can you have a discrete amount left for us to think about housing for the very, very low income? Mm-hmm. And it looks like that strategy is going to work. So excited about this.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it there, but I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about that bond package between now and November. So I want to say thank you to Shannon Isom, President and CEO of the Community Shelter Board. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Amy Riegel, Executive Director of the Coalition on Homelessness and Housing in Ohio. Thanks, Amy.
Thank you for covering these topics.
And this has been All Sides with Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News.